please pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Beloved Jesus Christ, Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Welcome, everyone. I hope you found a place to park. We're not used to 20 inches of snow at the end of February. Or most any time, for that matter, here. Mother Hamilton gave a talk in New York at the Carnegie Center in 1960. It's in April. And she says, you see, everyone concentrates upon Jesus the man who became Jesus the Christ. The word Jesus means Savior. The word Christ is the anointed one. So you are the man and you become the Christ. And when you do this, then this tremendous nectar, this radiance of light which is within each and every one of us, the petals of the lotus open up. And the nectar flows through your being, and you are filled with light. Everyone with whom you come in contact will be charged. They will never be the same again, and make no mistake about it, because their consciousness will be lifted, it will be exalted, and they will be taken many, many steps on the upward ladder. Now I'll close with one last story about Master. The woman who experienced this was not an SRF member, so therefore she would not confirm her experience. But after Master's passing, I think it was the gatekeeper or the lodgekeeper came rushing up to Mount Washington and said that Master had just visited his wife. She said she didn't know that he had passed on. She had been standing in this room, and Master came and knocked on the door, and so she went and opened it and invited him in. He went over and sat on the davenport and said to her, I am very tired. And he sat there for a few minutes. She said, why don't you rest? And he said, yes, I must rest. And just then her husband came dashing back from Mount Washington to tell her of his passing. And as he came through the door, Master disappeared, just like that. But where he had been, his imprint was on the cushion. Isn't this tremendous? His imprint was on the cushion. And I'll tell you just one more little story about him, because I know you love to hear stories about him. It was many times said that about Master in earlier years that he had commercialized his work. You see, when he started teaching, he used to charge $25 a course, which lasted 1 week. So it was $50 for 2 weeks, at the end of which time he gave Kriya initiation. So many criticized him for that. But don't forget that he did pioneering work in this country that can never be measured in value. He had tremendous odds to run up against. Many places where he lectured in the East, tomatoes, eggs, all the rest of it were thrown at him. He was jailed in several places, particularly in the South, because of his color. Later, in one instance, it was proved that he was innocent, but he refused to prosecute the man. He had terrible times. He had very little to live on. And he had only a few students in Boston. And some of these students weren't all wool and a yard wide, in quotes. I remember his telling of one instance where some of them came into class and they were talking about astrologist who was giving readings down in a tent someplace. And oh, they were excited. They said, "Why don't you come down? Imagine telling this to a great master. Why don't you come down?" And he said, "All right, I shall." So he went down and they all went with him and they stayed outside of the tent. So Master, of course, let his hair down. He had on his ochre-colored robe, and he kind of squatted down so that his pant legs wouldn't show, and he walked in and sat down. And the woman started reading with her crystal and her astrological charts, and she said, "Well, my good woman, I see that you are very unhappy with your husband." "You are going to get a divorce and meet and marry a very handsome man." And so he said, "I rose up and I said, 'So, this is what you do to people who come to you. This is a fraud which you are perpetrating upon them.' And he said, 'Of course, all my students were outside and listening.' And he said, 'When I walked out,' he said, 'they looked very humble indeed.'" So he had to establish a center from which the teachings might be disseminated. This cost a lot of money. Now, some people have the idea that ministers should live by God alone, but how are they going to get their food and their clothing and a roof over their head and enough money to do God's work unless the channels, who are God's children, who are the only ones it can manifest through, will help to carry on his work? And so many criticized him. But I want to tell you this story. In the early days when I was with Master, I was in Seattle. He was down in Los Angeles, and I went through terrific experiences. I was very, very, very poor. I had these three little children to take care of, and I had a husband who couldn't work. And so because of that, I had one dress to wear. I was lucky if I got one meal a day. I was many times very, very cold, very hungry. I remember when I carried my second daughter, I was cold up to my hips all the time. And I had very, very little to eat. It's a wonder they ever got here. But on top of that, during the Depression, I stood in a bread line for 2 solid years asking for food in order that I might eat. I was a very, very proud woman. And believe me, I lost my pride, because my love for my children was greater than anything else. And so every time I would, naturally, this took a tremendous toll out of me physically. Every time I would get in such a condition that I thought I was going to die and I couldn't go on any longer, I had the full responsibility for the support of the whole family. I was father, mother, breadwinner, wife, everything about it. I would wire Master and ask him to pray for me. Immediately, when he got this wire, the tremendous power that he would flow to me until my whole being would be rejuvenated and I could go on for a little longer. Now, no one ever told me, because I was a Westerner, that the thing to do when you come to the guru or spiritual teacher for any reason whatsoever is to give a love offering in flowers, fruit, or a money offering. But somehow I knew this instinctively, because he had given me so much. Everything that I am, everything that I hope to be, I owe to Master. And so I wanted to do something for him. So this one time I wrote him and told him about my predicament. I had $3.50 to my name. That's all I had. So I sent him $3 of it and asked him to receive this as a love offering. I got the most beautiful letter from him thanking me for my love offering. And he said, "Would you please accept this in return from me?" And he sent me back $6. I still have that letter, and I treasure it very greatly. To me, that proves that Master was not commercial. And in the beginning, the second time he was in Seattle, he had such an enormous crowd, as I told you, the first time that I talked to you in this auditorium. And not all of them took his classes, but there were well over 200, I think, who did. And some of them, the younger people, didn't have enough money. They were apparently high school students, college students, and that sort of thing. But they had come down where he was to hold these lessons just to see him once more because he had made such a terrific impression on them. So he came along to the front door and he said, "Did you want to come in?" And they said, "We don't have any money." And he said, "Miss Sally, who is now Sister Shraddha, give them all tickets for the full course. Let them go in." He made a statement once that Americans never appreciated anything unless they paid for it. He said, "You give it to them for nothing, and," he said, "they won't do anything about it. But if they have to pay for it, then it's important to them. So that's why I charge them." Well, I think we're all pretty well talked out. My gracious. You know what time it is? 10:20. I've been talking for almost 2 hours. But I wanted you to realize this is very important that you realize the working of the mystic Christ within you. Remember, it says in the Bible also that he who denies that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is an antichrist. Now, so many think that it's speaking of Jesus, the man, again, but it is not. It is speaking of the Christ within your own flesh. He is that one who will take you to God. I will tell you one more experience. Swami Ram Dass, before he took me into this experience, which was so tremendous, said to me, "When you come out of this, I want you to know that you will have four choices. You can either commit suicide, which, believe me, you want to do at one point. You can become a jnani, or seek the wisdom and oneness of God just by going to the forest or cave and never coming out again. But just to have your own God realization, to such a one, the world is an illusion. It does not exist. You can teach at the same level which you taught at before, or you can become parabhakti. A bhakti, of course, is one who goes to God through love and devotion. But the bhakti path includes all the rest of them, karma, jnana. Everything within this comes in your great love for God. And parabhakti means, of course, supreme. So that one wants God so badly that he will make all the final and supreme effort to be crucified on his own cross so that he may become one with God, the absolute within himself, before creation. And then he will come back to function at the state of Christ consciousness, wherein he is a light for all humanity. He will serve everyone whom he can and uplift them and take them to God. And such a one who has the courage to do that, believe me, is a mountain in God. You should ask yourself, should I give up my ego? What is this idea of nirvana, of doing away with the personality? I will become nothing, all in quotes. And people are afraid to become a nothing. But was Jesus Christ a nothing? Or Krishna a nothing? Buddha a nothing? Mohammed, Zoroaster? Were they not the greatest ones who ever lived on this earth? Will they not live after the kings, the presidents, the politicians have long been forgotten? They are the great ones. They have the most tremendous personalities, the most wonderful, brilliant, radiant life that ever was. So we must do this. This is the one thing I forgot to tell you. Before you go into the crucifixion, this tremendous fever burns in the spine. It is greater than anything which you have ever experienced or could be experienced in the ordinary human sense. If it is not controlled in some way, it will burn the brain. There are some American doctors who have taken special instruments over to India to attempt to get the yogis and the masters, or those who are about to go through this experience, to let them make tests and experiments on them so that they can register the reaction of the brain in that particular situation. So the Indians wear the sacred ash, which you see smeared over them, for a purpose. It is a cooling agent. It cools the body at such a time. Or sandalwood paste must be rubbed into the scalp. And in my own case, it was rubbed in so greatly that it felt like my hair, my scalp were coming off. And this cools the body, you see. Or if you don't have either one of those, you submerge the body up to the neck. Now, they couldn't break this. I was out of body consciousness for 7 days in this terrific state of fever. And they tried everything. Nothing worked. And finally, they set me on the back porch in a cotton shirt and a pair of cotton shorts. And the boys there formed a bucket brigade. They have these great big brass buckets. And they went to the well, and then they carried them on their heads. And they came in a line, and each one of them dumped a bucket of cold water over my head, and that finally broke the fever. During that time, I had no food, no water, no excretions at all. None whatsoever. And of course, many, many more experiences, which I can't go into tonight. But this is the anointment, which is spoken of in the Bible. You see, Mary anointed the head of Jesus. He said, "Suffer it to be so. Suffer her to do it. She must render this service to me." So that in itself, every act that is in this Bible that Jesus the Christ went through happens within your own life when this experience is ready to come to you. There is no other Messiah who has ever come on earth who has in every act of his life showed exactly what happens when you go to God. This is Christian yoga, union with God through Christ, the sons of the Christ. It is the greatest Catholic religion that ever was, because it is universal. And that is what the word means, universal. It applies to every race, every creed, every denomination, every man and woman and child on the earth, whether they know it or not. Some people call their Christ Krishna, some Buddha, some Muhammad, some Zoroaster, some Jesus. It makes no difference. We are talking about the same state of Christ consciousness, the Christ principle. So I want you to know this. I want you to become universal in your thinking. I want you to become free so that the time has come to release you from bondage when you have only God alone. And those of you who are here, believe me, will have that experience. You see, the teacher comes many times, but not all accept. But as one devotee said, a situation sometimes like that separates the men from the boys. So those who are ready for freedom, take it. Those who must still remain in bondage, also take that. But we must realize that we are all brothers and sisters. We must never give hate. We must give only love and understanding. This must be practice. This is what Master came to give. I have some of his original transcriptions, which I have been reading, and they are just wonderful. I have so much to share with you in such a short time, but perhaps next time, if there is a next time, we can go much further. It is wonderful to read these words as I do so. I feel my own consciousness merged into Mother's consciousness. I can hear the resonance of her words, her thoughts, her vibration, and they permeate all the way through me. This great privilege that we have had to be in the presence of a guru is the greatest experience in my life. It is strange, perhaps, to somebody who is not acquainted with a spiritual awakening within themselves to think of an individual can come into their lives and can help to change and transform them. But it is not so strange. We have all had teachers. We have all had people in our lives who have had a profound influence upon us. Somebody who knows something more, somebody who is a wonderful personality to be around. And we absorb them. We take them in. If you attend a university class and you have a particularly good teacher, suddenly you feel your brain activated. You have thoughts and creativity. You see new possibilities and horizons. A good teacher can do this for you. How much more so is that the case with a God-realized individual? Yesterday, I marked an anniversary of my birth, what we call a birthday. And it makes me reflective upon my life. And in thinking about my life, because in our last Gita class that we conducted down in Ashland, we were down last week, we were examining the first chapter. And the very first statement of the very first chapter is King Dhritarashtra, the blind sense king, who is asking Sanjay, he is divine insight. What did they? It is a self-examination. And as I told the class there, it is my view that there can be no psychological or spiritual growth unless we are willing to examine ourselves. People who project upon this world, what is wrong with the world? Everybody else has a problem. Everybody else, if they just behave, then I would be happy. If everybody just shared, then I would have prosperity. It's all about them. And on it goes with this victim kind of mentality. And when you stand up straight and you examine yourself and you see, what part did I play in all of this? Now, some people have an overdeveloped sense of guilt. They are not the calm witness that Sanjay is, because they take on responsibility for everything in this world. And that is not truth. That is not correct either. It is actually the other side of the ego coin. On the one side, the one person is quite arrogant. They think they're superior to everybody else around them. I have a relative and his wife, and they told me that one time. They thought they were superior. I couldn't believe my ears. It was so far from what I had ever thought or how I had thought. And so it was a strange thing, but some people actually feel that way. Other people feel that they are overly self-conscious, that everything that goes wrong must be their fault. And this is, as I say, the other side of the ego coin. It's just as arrogant. Because how in the world can everything be your fault? This world is made up of its individuals. And we all interact, we all co-create the consciousness that pervades this earth sphere. So we must each take responsibility for ourselves. But it should not be in a way that takes on too much, more than what is true. So Sanjay has this calm perspective. He's able to look at his life, examine his actions, what works for him and what does not work for him. It's a very simple maxim, but I think it's very powerful. When we find things that work for us, we do more of it. When we find things that don't work for us, we do less of it. It sounds simplistic, but it's amazing how oftentimes we continue to replicate things that do not work for us, expecting different results. It just will simply not happen. So we have this ability to examine ourselves, and there are occasions along in the year that may trigger that for you. One is New Year's, and oftentimes people are thinking of the past year and projecting onto the future year. It's useful in this sense, if we can take a look and see what are the trends in our life. I remember when I was still young, and for some reason I thought that my life would truly start when I was in my 50s. That's a strange thing to think, in one way, because, of course, life has started much before that, and adulthood has started much before that. And yet I can say that that has been the truth. Because it was when I got into my 50s that I began to really have the ability to take things deeper. When I met Mother, she put me into spiritual experiences. Within a few months after meeting her, I felt the eruption of that kundalini force she was talking about. I was sitting in a meditation group when I lived in Bellingham. And when I was sitting there, minding my own business, I was focused upon the ajna and the breath. And suddenly this tremendous power erupted at the base of my spine, and it shot straight up through my spine and went right to the ajna, the center of the forehead. And it got so hot there, I felt like that I could fry eggs. It was like a hot frying pan. It was tremendously uncomfortable. But I was also fascinated with it because I had heard Mother refer to this experience before. And I thought, here it is, it's happening. And for some 5 or 10 minutes, it stayed like that. And then it gradually began to subside. And although I didn't have any more happen right at that time, it was the beginning of that tremendous flow of consciousness. And then down through the years, that flow of within the spine became a constant feature that was there. It was as if I lived in two worlds. I lived in the world of man and the world, in this world of activity. But more so, this tremendous power was always at work inside of me. For several years, I was a truck driver. And sometimes I would take a truck down to the port and I'd be dropping it off. I'd be dropping down the wheels so that I could drop the trailer there. And suddenly this tremendous rush of energy would come up my spine and I just have to sit down on the ground and wait some time for it to pass. Sometimes I would be driving down the road and suddenly my eyes would roll up shut and the power would force itself up into the ajna. Now when you're driving an 80,000 pound vehicle 60 miles an hour down the road, this is not a good situation. So I'd have to pull over. I'd force my eyes open as long as I could. I'd get the truck parked and I'd sit there and I'd wait it out while this power was operating inside of me. And it took me on a journey, a tremendous journey, because it opened up worlds that I had no idea of before. It granted me visions into the spiritual world and the spiritual life. And through those visions and through the revelations that came to me, it gradually confirmed everything that Mother taught. And she always said, put your mind on God. Go straight to the president of the universe. Don't go to Mr. In-Between, middle management. Go straight to the top. And so that's what I strove to do. Now, I did it imperfectly. And I didn't always obey that inner command and that inner voice. And every time that I did, I paid a price. You see, God does not punish us. It's told rather picturesquely in the Bible, Old Testament, and sometimes in the New Testament. That God punishes those who do not do His will, that He is a jealous God. These are descriptions of inner states that realized masters have had, and perhaps they've been mistranslated down through time. They do tell a story, and an important story. When you put your mind on God, when you put your mind upon that inner presence, that light within you, when you strive to do the highest and the best within your life, then you are putting your mind on God. And when you deviate from that, when you give in to something that is not of the highest light, you pay a price for it, not always in the beginning. In fact, quite often, making a mistake feels quite pleasurable. It's quite a nice thing to do. And you think, I can get away with this. Now, in my own state, there were times when God's presence was with me so much that when I made mistakes, I still felt the presence, and I kind of felt, well, maybe I got away with that one. Or maybe even God approved. But if I kept going down that road, sure enough, that divine presence would begin to fade. I wouldn't have it so much. I wouldn't have it so powerfully. Perhaps it would disappear altogether. And then I would realize why God went away from me. And the truth is, I had gone away from God. You have a momentum in life. And when you've been living a life that is filled with errors, and then you put your mind upon the path and going the right way, you will, for a time, be consumed with the errors. You'll have to face yourself. And that momentum of negativity will remain with you for some time. And that's what makes it hard in the beginning. Because you don't always get an instant payoff, or in the beginning you instantly feel good, but then you begin to face these other things that you have done. The image once came to me of being in a high-speed boat. and you're planing along and you're traveling and it's just great fun. But you always have to stay away ahead of the wake. If you slow up or stop the boat at any time, suddenly you start getting rocked around quite a bit because all those waves that you've been making suddenly catch up with you. Well, when you stop to meditate and you slow this mind down, you slow your life down, suddenly all these waves that you yourself have created are knocking you about. And you may decide the best thing to do is start the boat up and get going again. Get ahead of the waves again, but you always have to be staying ahead of the waves. It's a lot of work. And it takes a lot out of you to do it. But if you can take those waves, if you can take the knocks and let them subside, gradually they will. And all those waves will calm down and then the surface of the water will become mirror-like and flat and peaceful. And then you will notice the divine virtues beginning to get reflected in the surface of that water. And this is what deepened meditation is like. But you have to be willing to pay the price. You have to be willing to take the knocks to get there. So we do our practice. And if we are fortunate, we have that awakening. I was surprised as I traveled the length and breadth of India and talked to so many swamis and yogis in different places and asked them about kundalini experiences. I wanted to gather any information, any ideas that they had about how to make the experiences smoother, safer, and so on. I found not one who could speak from their own experience about these experiences the mother told us about in such vivid detail. It made me realize how great a percentage of devotees within this group and within Mother's devotees have had these profound awakenings, and how rare that is in this world. Many people will talk about, yes, I had a kundalini rise up, and what they're describing is a feeling of life force flowing in their spine. That's not the kundalini. It's wonderful, it's encouraging, it helps you to advance, but it's not the same. The kundalini is a specific life force energy that is coiled up at the base of your spine. It's coiled up there and it looks like a serpent. And I know that because I saw it once as I was going through experiences and I was at Bonnie's house while Mother was giving a talk. And because God was putting me through experiences at the time of making me move in certain directions. You see, that kundalini energy affects your physical body. And sometimes it stretches you, it makes you move in certain situations, it'll put you into yoga poses, and it'll really stretch you further than what you thought you could do. One time it put me flat on my back, and it put my fingertips and my toe tips, and I lifted my entire body up on the fingertips and toe tips, something I couldn't possibly have done in an ordinary state. But this tremendous power was flowing through me, and it arched me up, so that I was only supported by those four points, and I was laid out in the form of this cross. You see, the cross is the body. It is upon this cross that we are crucified. That is, it is upon this cross that we face everything that we have done in an ego sense. That is our battleground. In Indian terms, it is the battleground of the Kurukshetra, of the Bhagavad Gita. And it is here that we are crucified. It is right within your own self. Jesus came to show the way, and he was the way. He showed the way because through example, he went through all the things that were required in order to release his consciousness from the three bodily jars, from the physical, the astral, and the causal. And we need to emulate him in every detail. We need to follow in his footsteps. Now, if people will say that they need to follow the Christ, but you literally need to follow in his footsteps to go through those experiences that he went through in order for you to become the Christed one. As many as believed on and received him, gave he power to become the sons of God. The Son of Man in you is the human ego, it's the human self. But the Son of God is the divine spark that is within you. Within that divine spark resides all the vastness of what God is. Mother used to say that when she stood upon this earth with these 2 feet, she was connected with the entire earth. And this is true. When you feel that connection with God, you are connected with everything that God is. Now, just as when you're standing upon the earth, you may not have complete knowledge of everything that is going on in the earth, but you have that connection through your feet. Even so, whenever you connect with God, you are in union with everything that God is. And when you open yourself as a pure channel to the divine consciousness, everything that God is available to you. Now, it doesn't need to all come to you at once. It would literally blow every circuit in your being if you did it. But you can take whatever it is that God is giving you in that moment. I dare say that anybody at any time can really focus at their heart center, in the core of their own being, and they will have some sense, if they're really sincere and really open about it, they will have some sense of that divine presence. It will be some feeling of calm, of peace, of joy, of light. It will be a presence and experience that is something definitely connected to you, but also superior to you, higher, above you. And you will recognize that. And when you recognize that, you keep your mind upon it. You know, all meditation techniques are really in order to feel and experience the Supreme Presence right within you. We should not make a fetish of any one of our practices. We should always remember that a practice is leading towards some higher state of consciousness. And so, in order to do that, the yogis discovered that if you focus upon the breath, and you focus upon a divine syllable or a mantra, that it will make you more open to experiencing the divine presence within you. The end result is not just to repeat a mantra or keep your mind upon the breath. The end point is to feel God's presence. Now, when you sit for meditation and you sit to practice, just practice opening yourself first to feeling that divine presence. Feel it somewhere in your heart center, deep within your own being. Feel that divine presence begin to grow in you. You might feel it as a tingling sensation or a wonderful vibrancy that begins to surround you and pervade the atmosphere around you. That is your connection with God, and your practice should just only increase that sense of presence. If you're doing a technique for the sake of doing the technique, you are really missing the boat. And so as God took me through all these various experiences, He began to show that there was this divine spark that was within me. Now, it is within every one of us. But the vast, vast majority of humanity wanders this earth without any inkling whatsoever that the divine consciousness is right within them. How can this be possible? It is so because we have become so preoccupied with the things of the world. This world is God's creation too, you know. So there's nothing imminently evil or wrong or bad about it. But if your mind is so preoccupied with the things of this world that you don't know that inner divine experience, then that becomes a problem. Because you're really missing the most vital, the most beautiful, and the most wonderful experience that you can have. You have a divine presence, a divine friend, a divine playmate, a divine teacher, a divine presence that is everything that is of God. And it is right within you. And yet we walk around in this world as if it's not existent. How terrible, how sad. God is not punishing us by withholding Himself from us. I had an experience once where I felt like I was trying to open the doorway to God so much. And I was putting everything into it, and I was beginning to really get frustrated with God. Why is He keeping the door closed when I'm doing everything in my power to open the door? And in this vision that I had, I looked down from pulling on the door with both my hands, and I looked down at the floor, and I saw my own foot planted against the door. My own foot was keeping the door shut. And as hard as I was trying to pull it open, I was pushing it shut. And this is the human condition. We want God, but we don't want Him. We're afraid. We're afraid that the things that we're attached to may go away. We're afraid that our life will get worse. Larry and I were having a very interesting discussion the other day about the path of the yoni and the path of the bhakti. Now, the path of Buddhism, not always, there are different versions of Buddhism. But the original Buddhism, Buddha was more of a yoni. That is, the path of discrimination and wisdom. With great clarity, he defined what the problem was and how to go beyond the problem. That attachments to this world and to this body, to our old lives, keeps us from entering into that high state of nirvana, union with God. But what happens to a realized soul after they have attained that highest vision? Now, Mother quoted Master, or Papa, as saying that there's four possibilities. One is that that individual could end their life right there. They had lived their life to its fullest, and it's done with, and they could just end it. There is a wonderful story about Ramakrishna, and a great saint came to him. And the saint could enter into that high state of nirvana, but it was pure impersonal. He didn't see God as manifest. And Ramakrishna was a great devotee of the Divine Mother and saw God manifest, but didn't enter into that rarefied state of nirvana, which is also called Brahma Nirvana. And so this great saint, Todapuri, came to Ramakrishna and he taught him how to go into that highest state. He sat down with him, and as he sat with the great master, Ramakrishna, he said, "Now focus on your asana." Ramakrishna did so, and he saw the Divine Mother there. Oh, the Divine Mother, she's so beautiful, and he's so entranced with the form, with the image. Todapuri said, "No. Go beyond that. Go beyond the form. Try again." So with great concentration, Ramakrishna closed his eyes. He looked at, oh, the Divine Mother. How beautiful she is. Becoming entranced with her form again. Todapuri became enraged. He said, "No, you must go beyond the form." He looked around. He saw a piece of broken glass there. He jabbed it into the ajna of Ramakrishna. Suddenly, Ramakrishna went beyond the form. He went straight into nirvana, Brahma nirvana. And Todapuri said, "My God, he did in a few minutes what it took me 20 years to accomplish." But then Todapuri became very depressed. He had some kind of stomach ailment that was giving him a lot of pain. And he thought to himself, "Why don't I just kill myself?" He says, "I've accomplished what I came to do. I'm just going to walk out into the Ganges and let the Ganges take my life." So he started to do so as a moonlit night. He was in pain. He felt that he had achieved everything in this life that he had come to do. And so he began to walk out onto the Ganges. And as he did so, he walked and he walked and he walked, and he was dry. And suddenly he realized he was out in the middle of the Ganges and he was walking on top of the water. And when he turned around and he looked around, he saw the Divine Mother manifesting as this universe. He saw the universal vision. He went beyond Brahma Nirvana. He went into that Parabhakti state, the supreme state of devotion in which the entire universe becomes a manifestation of the divine. He had both, you see. God in Nirguna, or the supreme state without form, without limit, and also God manifesting as form. That is the state that our dear mother attained to. And it is a rare state to come to in this world. But when we do it, we are then in a state of complete freedom. We do not have to ignore this world in order to merge into spirit, but rather the spirit and world merge into one. In the beautiful scripture saying of the Gospel according to Thomas, Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is spread all over this world, but who has the eyes to see it and the ears to hear it? Can you imagine that the divine presence that you feel within your own heart, spread all over this world, that you live in an ocean of spirit, but you did not have the eyes to see it nor the ears to hear it? That there is no place that you can look, that the divine consciousness, the divine light is not present. This is the most wonderful state to attain to. And when you do this, then you have universal freedom. And whether you wear a form or not wear a form, it makes no difference. We have the lovely story of Babaji, who is thinking of dropping his form. And his sister, Mataji, caught his thought. And so she called a little meeting. And at the meeting was Lari Mahasaya, Mataji, Babaji, and Ram Gopal Mazumdar. And they all gathered under the moonlight. They all were there. And Mataji said, "You are thinking of dropping the body." Babaji said, "Yes." She said, "Why don't you keep the body?" And he says, "What difference does it make whether I wear a form or not?" See, to him it makes no difference. He could wear a body or not wear a body. And she, with brilliance, said, "Well, if it makes no difference, why don't you remain in the body then?" And so he did. And so he is always available to few. But that spirit that Babaji is, you know, we should not make a fetish that he has a body, because he is in spirit. Lari Mahasaya would write to devotees and say, "Why do you want to come here and see this bag of bones? I'm always with you. Look in the ajna. Enter into the Kutastha Chaitanya, the divine Christ consciousness, and you will be with me." You know, when you worship a form, the form comes and goes. There was a devotee who worshiped Krishna. And Krishna would come to him, and one time he was up on top of a building, up on the rooftop, and it was nighttime, and he saw Krishna and a troop of gopis going through the streets, and Krishna was playing his flute, and he ran down in mad anticipation, and it seemed like the more he chased them, they were just disappearing around the corner of the next building. He could never catch up with them. It was maddening. And he was in that state of mad love, divine love. But you know, when God is in your heart and you feel the Spirit, there is no separation. To feel the Spirit of Babaji both within you and everywhere about you. To feel that God is dwelling within you and in the heart of every person that you meet. This frees you. And this is the greatest state that we can attain in this lifetime. It makes you free. And so let us strive for that divine union. Let us not settle for Mr. In-Between, middle management. Go straight to the president of this universe. Go straight to that divine consciousness within you. And then you will see it reflected and open in so many different doorways of this world. As Master said in the beautiful poem, "I looked for the door for God and couldn't find it anywhere. And finally settled at the ajna, and that door opened. And now I find doorways to God everywhere, in a flower, in a sunset, in a mountain. Everywhere I now see doors opening to God." You become one with that. You merge yourself into it. Oh, and to pretend that there's nothing to do in this world, that there's nothing to attain. What a terrible waste of a lifetime. But to find that purpose, to seek for it with all of your strength, all of your mind, your heart and soul, what a great fulfillment that is in life. And it is up to God then to put you through what experiences He will in order to free you. And when you experience everything that God gives you in this life as perfect for you, then it is so. Then it is so. And then everything becomes a doorway to the infinite. Even those things that apparently would distress you or distract you, those too are perfectly designed for you to help awaken you. I cannot think of a greater thing to do for a birthday than to gather with all of you here today. To feel the spiritual consciousness pervading this room. And to think of each one of us as an emissary for the divine presence. You know, it is said that God is love and love is God. And it is the truth. It is the truth. It's not a sentimentality of love. It is love itself. It is a state of being. And it is a terrific state to come to. So let us march forward in life. Let each one of us carry a light within us. Be a light to this world. Be unafraid to let that light shine. Let it shine through your words. Let it shine through your thoughts, through your being, through your work, everything that you do. Let it be an expression of divine consciousness, and know the freedom that comes with that expression. Pray with me.
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence
in every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
And surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He. Bow to those that are listening at great distances, sometimes all around the world, people listen in to these talks. That blessings go out to one and all. Although on a day like today when we have a potluck, they don't get the food. For that, they need to come in person. Let us stand in healing ohms. And today I would like to have healing ohms as a general outgoing for the resolution of all conflicts and fights, the establishment of peace. Just think of humanity beginning to value peace harmony, brotherhood, not division of one man against another, based on religion or creed or color or any other reason, but to see the unity of all life. So let us send out these healing ohms to all this world for that effect. Ooh.